You're listening to Face Off, episode 84, recorded August 30th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
In this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. All right, Mark, let's get into our news and follow-ups. I put something in here that I'm kind of interested in. And I'm curious to see if you've heard much of this about the whole Jason Calacanis and his Facebook hate. He really hates Facebook.
You know, I'm not a big Facebook fan myself. I think I remember seeing the first time I was aware of this kind of stuff of Facebook. Well, I guess he's hating it for different reasons. Go ahead and let's watch. Let's listen.
Okay,
to the clip.
So listen to the clip. This is from This Week in Startups. It's a show that Jason Calacanis does, and this is kind of what he thought about Facebook.
This is a message to Y Combinator companies and hopefuls. If you tell Facebook about your startup before you reach critical mass and you get involved with Facebook in any way, you are an idiot. They will steal your company's ideas and try to get you to take a small price for your company and vision take a job at Facebook, which, by the way, is going to be a job that sucks. Don't do it. It's a scam. It's a trap. It's a trap. It's a trap. Insert Star Wars clip here. It's a trap. It's a trap. End of message.
So, yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, you and I, we've talked about this a lot. I've never been comfortable building a company off of a platform anyways. You know, even platforms like Twitter and Facebook, it's, you know, I might build a small product off of it, but I mean, it would definitely not be, you know, like I think companies like Zynga and, you know, others that have really just generated all their revenue off of another platform. I mean, that kind of scares me.
Yeah, it really does. You know, the one thing I had to mention about this clip is, you know, Google does the same thing. They buy small businesses that are working on their platform or whatever, or just say it has something to do with them, and then, you know, gives them a job there.
Right, I guess.
Why is he hating on Google?
Well, let's get on to some of the background of this. The background was that it was something like the Y Combinator, which is a VC company. A lot of people you read Hacker News, Y Combinator. Y Combinator is a company, I guess, that does VC, and they sort of announced that they're doing an agreement where that early in their stages, before they would like fund you, is you would meet with Facebook or talk with Facebook or something like that. And really, what Jason Calacanis is saying is, I mean, normally that's, you know, not a big deal. You can talk to Google. Google buys small companies all the time, but you're not meeting with Google before you go to VC and then having them steal your ideas. Plus, Google oftentimes, like, really, they'll buy your idea. They usually don't tend to steal ideas. They usually have something I think is, you know, fairly innovative, or they buy a company and integrate it. Whereas Facebook, I think, has had a reputation of and Twitter to some extent too, of really they just steal the ideas of people that build off their platform.
I see. So he's more concerned with the fact that Facebook is more likely to come to a business and say, we like your idea. Can you come work for us and do it here? And if they don't, then they just, Facebook does it anyways.
Yeah. Kind of. You're kind of, the thought there is that you're sort of screwed either way. And this is funny. It's turned into kind of a spitting match on Y Combinator, where Paul Graham, who is one of the big guys at Y Combinator, was sort of defending this. And I mean, it's just funny because we talk about, I don't like Facebook. I don't like Facebook as a company. I mean, I like the product more than you. You don't use it very much. I use it a lot. I really enjoy the network and connecting with people. But as a company, I don't. And I don't like Mark Zuckerberg. I think that sort of the morality of that company is shown through with the number of lawsuits they have. Where, I mean, even lawsuits where Facebook says, oh, that's silly, that's frivolous, they go through quite a lengthy discovery phase, because usually there is like there's some grounds of truth in that.
Yeah, definitely. It's a privacy concern. I know, that's for a lot of people.
Well, I mean, I'm even not just like it. This is a company that just has too much shady stuff on it. I feel like I wouldn't want to work for Mark Zuckerberg because he's kind of like a snotty 30-year-old, and you know, he acts like a 12-year-old, and I just don't think I'd want to work for a company with some guy like that at the helm.
Well, so do we have a response to this
Basically, I mean, it's kind of like Paul Allen and Jason Calacanis start going sort of back and forth, and it's sort of the same rehashing of what we've been talking about. But I mean, it's kind of been an interesting development that, you know, Jason Calacanis brought enough heat to it that Paul Graham decided that he had to respond to it. But I don't know. I just thought I just want to talk about it because we've talked about using these platforms before and how we're sort of not comfortable with that. And I think this kind of shows that even when, you know, when someone like Jason Calacanis is really skeptical of it, and not because of sort of the obvious reasons, he just thinks that they're greasy. You know, he's like, that's just a shady company. You're an idiot. He doesn't even sort of dance around it. He's like, you're an idiot. It's a trap. You're stupid. They'll steal your idea. Don't do it. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when I first saw the link, I thought it was going to be him encouraging entrepreneurs to make a Facebook clone that doesn't suck as bad as Facebook, but it was totally a different direction. So
yeah,
interesting.
It's a tough one. What is the law? I mean, it's where the network is valuable is the number of people in it.
Oh yeah. So Facebook, it's totally about the community. I mean, everybody's on there. They definitely have a critical mass. It's kind of like eBay. There probably will never be another auction site.
Yeah, because I mean, its usefulness is the amount of people on it. I went through the same thing with Jaiku back in the day. I really like Jaiku, but you know, if no one's on it, it's really not useful. It's like, oh, these features are great, but no one can ever see my messages. It kind of sucks.
Yeah, totally.
All right, let's move on to another interesting development. Was sort of the VoIP and Google Talk that was integrated in Gmail.
I saw this, but I didn't actually use this.
I mean, I played around with it a little bit. I didn't play around with it because at first I thought it was just, oh, you know, they're integrating Google Voice stuff, existing voice stuff into Gmail. Who kind of cares? But I was talking to my coworker today, and he was telling me about how, really, I mean, they put in a whole VoIP system. Like, you can make calls from there through Google Talk. They're kind of integrating the Gizmo 5 stuff. It's not sort of the standard Google Talk. What was the one that they bought for Google Talk?
Grand Central.
It's not really Grand Central stuff. This is integrating more of the Gizmo 5 sort of VoIP backend stuff.
So is it available in Gmail's UI right now? Or
yeah.
Do you have to enable it? Or?
No, you have to be signed into chat on Gmail. I know.
Oh, I see. I usually turn that off because I had there was a while there when I had multiple devices, it would kick me off and do some goofy stuff. Remember that?
It's still annoying about that because like devices, your point of contacts like fight for what's in charge. But so yeah, the thing is like you can if people have a phone number in there, you can click on them and you can call their phone. What's cool is you can call using like phones or a built-in VoIP in you know your computer too. So it's not. You know, like with Google Voice, when you called someone, it would do sort of an interconnect. Like it would call one of whatever phone you had connected to Google
right.
Talk and then call the other phone from there. This can do like direct connect phone calls.
Interesting. So you could actually – so does it use Flash to take control of your microphone or
yeah,
how does that work?
I'm assuming. I don't know. I didn't actually – I didn't really try making a call with it, but oh, yeah, I think you have to download the plugin, which means it's not Flash, which means you probably can't do it like on Linux. Which is always a frustration with you and I. Well, I still, I don't know. I have
Linux is like, what, 2% or 1%?
Hey,
you can't blame them.
Hey, be nice.
Hey,
how do they do that? How do they do that at Google? Because didn't they like ban Windows unless you had a specific need for it in the office?
Yeah, if you're a new employee, I don't know if it's old, it goes for older employees, but if you're a new employee, they released a blog article on this where you had a choice between a Mac or a Linux Ubuntu, I believe it was.
That's crazy.
So they were just throwing
Windows
out.
Chrome? Or do you think eventually they'll switch to Chrome OS?
Wasn't that mainly for netbooks, though?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're kind of moving towards an entire cloud-based sort of world anyways, like in their mind, right? I mean, if you can make phone calls from a browser and all that, I mean, what do you really need the full fledged operating system?
I don't know. Real time stuff, I guess. You know, things that require some powerhouse resources.
Like
but
what?
then again, HTML5 is starting to.
Right. I mean, that's what I was like. What if you're
they
just
ported,
working
like,
at Google?
I think it was like Quake or Quake 2 or something in HTML5. You could play the game. It was like
that's
what
scary. That's creepy. All right, hey, let's get into our Geek Tool of the Week. So our Geek Tool of the Week is the Ogeo Mastermind Street Pack. It's a backpack. The reason I put this on was that I needed a backpack. So I recently, before this, had the Ogeo Street City Corp Messenger Bag. And it's a really good bag. I mean, I've really, really liked that bag. I've had it, I think, for 4 years now. It's held up really well. It's a great bag. But the laptop I got at work recently is a 15-inch MacBook Pro, like an older model. So it's big and heavy. And the problem is it doesn't really work well in the messenger bag because it's so heavy and stiff that it really pulls against my shoulder. It doesn't really sit against me. You know, it remains very flat and kind of bounces as I walk. And I just was like, man, it seems so much heavier than it should be. And I was like, well, I'm going to get a backpack. The problem is when you get older, you know, finding a backpack, I think, is kind of hard because, you know, they're either really kids' backpacks or, you know, sort of hip teenager backpacks or really sort of bland, you know, or Targus or, yeah, Targus, right? That's the one that makes, they're like Targus backpacks. And so I wanted something kind of different. I didn't want to just get like the classic like Targus or whatever. What is that right? That doesn't sound right.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Company, the ones that like strap across the front are
well,
kind
no,
of
those
weird,
are Timbuktu. But like, what's the brand?
You're way past me. Timbuktu. I don't even. Is that what they're?
Yeah, Targus. Targus, the leading provider of laptop cases, bags, and accessories. They were like the first backpack to have like a padded laptop section in.
Okay. You know, I just got my first laptop like a couple months ago, so
well,
kind of needed the laptop things.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Well, I've had like four desktops. Like I have like, anyways.
Like I said, you're forward thinking clearly. So what I decided to check out was I wanted to see if Ogeo had a backpack because I really liked the messenger bag. I mean, it's good thick zippers. You know, I really did like it a lot. It just was sort of the form factor that I wanted to take a break from. So I checked it out, and they have a lot of cool backpacks. They also have like a lot of hipster teenager skateboarder backpacks with like crazy patterns and all kinds of that goofy stuff on the outside. So check them out. You can get the link to them in the show notes. I ended up getting what was the model? The Mastermind, which is really good. It's got a padded laptop sleeve in the back and then a big main pocket and then like a small little file folder organizer pocket. Really cool. I got it in the Sherlock plaid color, which is funny because it's the exact color that my messenger bag was, which I learned at work from my coworkers. They're like, you like brown, don't you? I do.
I like brown.
But it's a really good backpack. It's got, you know, like I said, the big zippers. I like good thick zippers because that seems to be a big point of failure on a lot of them. It's got pockets on the side and really comfortable. So something to think of. I think maybe it's just me, but I have, you know, sort of written off backpacks for anything but backpacking in the mountains or hiking, and then, you know, basically my angsty teenage life. So if you haven't thought of it back, think about it again, because there's some cool ones out there like these Ogeo ones. Check them out.
All right, with that was our lovely geek tool. We're going to get into a really special topic this time, which is a web app that we made. So you notice we didn't have any web apps this episode. That's because we're going to be talking about our web app,
the master web app, to rule them all.
Since we made it, we're going to talk about it the whole episode, I guess. So this is going to be a one giant web app discussion.
So our app is AgileTask. You can get to it by going to agiletask.me. And really, I mean, what is it? We call it sort of your personal backlog tool. And it kind of came out of a discussion I had with one of my coworkers, Paul Levette, who we've had on the show before. One day, he was trying all different kinds of like to-do task tracking apps, you know, and he was really frustrated with it, and he couldn't find one that fit just right. And he said, you know, why isn't there like a to-do app that follows Agile principles, like where you have today, where you need to worry about it now, and then just a backlog of a bunch of stuff where it's really easy to enter stuff into the backlog? And I said, I don't know. That's a pretty good idea. And so I came and I thought about it. And then I came back to work and I asked him and I said, hey, it was kind of your idea. I'm going to, you know, do right by you here and say, do you mind if I make this app? Because it was your idea. We talked about it, but you didn't seem like you were interested in making it. But I am. Can I? And he's like, yeah, sure. Go ahead. That's a great idea. I really, you know, that's good. So then I talked to I got you and Rob together and I said, hey, you know, the truth is, I mean, I've done I've done a lot of web programming in my day, but I haven't really done a lot of full spectrum web programming. Mm-hmm. Start to finish. So I was like, you know, I don't really want to do this all by myself. I want to get a team together, and I really want to work with you and Rob, our friend Rob Lund. So we kind of got together, and we were just hanging out one night, started talking about it, and the rest is kind of history.
Yeah, I kind of remember that when you and Paul were kind of looking at the different apps and comparing them all, and I remember you were saying, yeah, we gotta check this one out. It lets you do this and that, and and all of a sudden, you know, you go from like all these features that you want to. I kind of want just the simple, like I want to add a task really fast. And there's a few things that can do some of the things, but we kind of thought we could do it better. So we got into to-do apps. I know to-do apps are like probably the most prevalent web apps there are on the web right now. But
yeah,
we decided to do it anyways. And I think we came out with a pretty decent product.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. This it's been a really interesting experience because we've been sort of reading a lot of different things and incorporating a lot of ideas into our strategy and the app itself. So one of them is sort of the we did not follow the freemium model of make a fully functional free version to get as many people as you can and then have a really premium version with extra features. We kind of said no to that, and we kind of took the model of it really struck me when we talked to Steve Bristol from Less Everything, and I believe it was either during our interview or when we were chattering afterwards or something. He said, you know, if you want people to pay for something, don't give them something free. It's just you can't expect them to pay for giving them everything they want for free. So with that in mind, we said, all right, well, let's make we do a lot of web apps on the show. So we said, we want some way to test it out. I get really mad when I want to test out an app and they say, give me your credit card information. We'll give you a 30-day free trial. You know, I just want a really cheap free version. It doesn't have to be fully functional at all. It can be totally gimped, but I just want to try it without having to give you my credit card information. So we decided that we would have a free version, but it would be sort of seriously handicapped enough to try the app to see if you like it and want to pay for it.
So, I mean, give them some examples of how we kind of handicapped it.
Well, let's talk about some of the features of the app. So the first thing we did is there are sort of, when you log in, there are three main components. There is the sort of add a task section, which is very important. We really want to focus on being able to add tasks quickly and easily, because the whole crux of this is that it's easy to put stuff down to remember, because you cannot rely on yourself to remember them. I know I can't. I think a lot of people fall into this. It's like you think you'll remember, but you won't. So if you make it really easy to add tasks, that's the whole point. It's just add them, get them in there, forget about it, get back to work.
Okay.
The next chunk is sort of your current iteration, I guess, if you want to use agile terms. We call it today. So these are tasks that you have in there that you need to take care of today. The source for these to-do items come from the third component, which is the icebox, which is your backlog. So this is just your backlog of everything. There's just everything that you need to do. You put in the backlog, and then every day you're supposed to move things up into the backlog that you want to get done that day, so that while you're working, you don't worry about your backlog. It's there. It's safe. You're not thinking about it. You're worried about those things you have to get done today.
Okay. And some extra features we got are like tags. You know, kind of like in Twitter, if you use the hash symbol and a word behind it, that's like a tag. For us, we have that. If you use any hashtag and a word in like a task name that you want to do, it automatically becomes a tag, and you can filter those by just clicking on the tag at the top or in the actual task.
Right. One thing that we thought of is we really want to keep the app simple. We don't want to try and enforce too many systems or ideas on people. We kind of want to make it very generic. And tags really fit well with that, because really it allows people to develop a lot of their own systems. Rather than saying you can have, you know, categories or anything like that, some people don't want categories. Some people just want, you know, maybe some people just use tags for like a level of importance. Maybe some people use, like me, I use tags for different projects. So like I like to be able to go to work and just filter all my work tags and then go home and just see all my home tags. And then I use multiple tags a lot, like home, and then I have a tag called like checkout for stuff that I want to read later. It really is flexible to allow you to sort of develop your own systems that way.
Yeah. You know, other to-do tasks or other to-do web apps have separate, like either they have like a separate list where you keep all these things, or they have you actually have like tags that you add to the task. But we right. thought it'd be easier to, if you could type it in while you're typing in your task, that makes it simple, right?
Right. I mean, again, the flexibility of entering is critical. So I don't want to have to enter it and then go find that task and then add tags to it. Just do it all online. Another thing is people were like, well, I want to be able to add tasks directly to today and not have them in the icebox. Well, we did that again by if you just do a bang, an exclamation point T at the beginning of your task, it goes right into today. Again, the focus is on not increasing functionality through clicks, but allowing you to just like, okay, you know, I have to do this project. I know I'm going to be able to think about, you know, 10 things for this project I have to do. Just stream of consciousness, put them out, get them out, tag them right then, do it. Just put it out, text, and the system should take care of it.
Right. So, I mean, just simply by typing in the same box that you normally would do, you can actually send a task to today or icebox buckets. Right. So,
and then, of course, the classic, you can complete a task, you can move them from between icebox today, and you can delete them. Those are sort of the functionality of the homepage. Go ahead.
So I guess we were talking about the freemium model. So one of the things that we had done is actually limit it. So for the free account, we've limited it to 20 tasks you can have at a time.
Yep, 20
and I know
total.
For myself, that's not, I mean, I would go over 20 pretty quick. So, but it is, it's not more of like, I don't expect users to use 20 or like that 20 is what most people would be under. It's right. more like you said, it's a trial. It's like I can see everything that's going to happen, but I'm going to need to kind of pay for this app.
Yeah, totally. Try it for a day. And I mean, if you go over 20 for a day, then you clearly have a need to purchase an app like this.
So the other spin we did on it were achievements, which have been really interesting because I really like getting them, and it's kind of fun. You know, sometimes looking at huge lists of things to do can be, I don't know, depressing or frustrating.
Yeah.
Or,
absolutely. I mean,
you know, energy draining.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that we really try to tackle with this app is being productive and making you want to be productive, you know, are sort of two things. And while a task app can make you sort of productive, for me, like personally, the big thing is I have to have a reason to use it and keep it open, because usually after like a week, I just stop using something like that. So we implemented achievements, and the way I look at it, we sort of have like two types of achievements. We have like productive achievements, which is like you did good, you worked hard. And then we have a lot of novel, fun ones, which is like if you mention a certain thing in a task, or if, you know, you leave something, or if you do particular things, we kind of like poke fun at how sometimes we can be unproductive or it's difficult to keep track of your tasks. And that's a big thing for us. We really wanted it to be a fun thing and really sort of use sort of game mechanics of achievements to try and motivate you to use the app, and by using that, be that much more productive.
It also acts as a reminder too, you know, like one of our achievements is to leave a task in the today box for more than 24 hours. It's obviously that's not how we intended it, you know, like, so that one's called I don't want to work. So, but it's a reminder. It's like, oh yeah, I was supposed to do that, you know, like, oh, I just got an achievement for being lazy.
Yeah,
but it's like a reminder, and it makes it kind of fun. You're like, oh, well, I better do that tomorrow.
One of my coworkers got an achievement that was, it was kind of one of those like, hey, funny ones. And he's like, I just got an achievement I didn't want to get. And he, you know, it was kind of funny. We were laughing about it because, you know, we try and hit both sides of the spectrum. You know, you could do just achievements on like, you did four tasks today, rumpf, you know, and that's fun. It makes you feel good. But at the same time, it, you know, those would get pretty mundane. So we've been looking at sort of funny, catchy spins to give people achievements for.
All right, so let's get into the things we learned.
Yeah, Mark, what did you learn doing this project?
I think the first thing that came to mind was just the API and the whole REST thing. We actually, when we started with the kind of the front page. Well, the page that I'm looking at, the tasks page where you're moving tasks and adding them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we quickly opted for the Ajax, you know, fast, instant type interface. Mm-hmm. And the API, we actually made our API before we really, you know, had a finished UI, mm-hmm. and it made the JavaScript so much easier, and it really it made it clear what the advantages are of having a great API, and and being restful makes it a lot easier to work with.
I agree. You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, when you're thinking that ahead of time, or I mean, when you're doing that ahead of time before you even do any of the sort of the UI functionality, it's, you're like, hey, and then when you go to write the documentation for it, you're like, I actually do know how this API works. It's not just me fiddling around with the API for a couple of days. You're like, I mean, I used it when I was programming this app.
Yeah, like we had like a simple way to add tasks and move them around and things, but then we quickly made an API, and then we made our app off of our own API. So people that are going to take advantage of our API will know that it's going to work because our app uses it.
Yeah, totally. So,
and it made... I knew what REST was. We did a show on it and everything, but it really made it clear the advantages and the benefits of having an API.
Yeah.
Another thing that I learned a little bit was JSON. Prior to this app, I had pretty much all the APIs I ever worked with were XML, which it's, for all intents and purposes, it's the same thing. It's just it was something I learned.
Yeah, that's nice.
One of the big things too was working as a team. We have three of us: me, you, and Rob Lund.
Three dudes.
I'm kind of a solo programmer, just not by choice. Just you know, it kind of happened.
You were. But
this
single.
This is great. Just working as a team, getting issues and submitting Git, you know, committing and pulling. It was fun doing that.
You were a lone wolf pack, but now you are a three man wolf pack.
Been united. So the thing about the team though is I don't know why, but we have just worked just excellent together. We've never really had a fight over what technologies to use or any of the things that commonly arise in groups, whether it's people committing bad code or deleting stuff or.
Well, I mean, now that you mention it, committing bad code, I'd like to bring up a couple. That's our ongoing joke.
I'm actually wondering when there's going to be some big fight sometime because.
You know, Rob and I have gotten into some heated discussions. You know, we're both fairly bullheaded, I think. And so there's been a couple times where we've had to kind of say like, all right, well, let's talk about it tomorrow because clearly we're not going to get anywhere today. You know, but it's good. It wasn't, you know, to the point of like getting fed up or anything like that. We were just kind of, we both realized that it was clearly a communication error. And once we sort of get our ideas across the way they should be, you know, expressed, then we usually tend to understand it.
Yeah. I think we should use Internet Explorer 6. I think that would start a fight.
Yeah, you would. We'd kick you out of the team. Get out of here.
Lots of experience with the Ajax. Most of the websites I've done were not heavy on the Ajax JavaScript side. This one definitely is. The whole UI really is JavaScript, especially with like the drag and drop.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely one.
So those are kind of a few things I picked out that I learned. What are some of the things that you learned?
Well, like I said before, the one of the big things I learned was really starting a Rails project start to finish. I mean, I've done a lot of web stuff, but really, I've done a lot of Rails, but it's usually been maintaining or fiddling around with someone else's code or hopping in midway or anything like that. I mean, it was really interesting for me because this was my first Rails like start to finish. I mean, from the point of like doing Rails blah, you know, to committing it the first time to GitHub and figuring out how to do it. So that was really good because I really needed that. I mean, it was to the point of people asked me and I was like, well, I know Rails, but do I really know it? I mean, I didn't do it start to finish. And honestly, if I did, I would have a really hard time. And I kind of did. And it was really good that this was a project where I learned with, you know, three guys who were, you know, none of us are really Rails experts at all. So it was good that we kind of fumbled through it together and learned a lot of things that you need to learn when you use a technology from, you know, beginning to end. The other thing, this was my first independent sort of product creation. I mean, you know, you did Rocket Ship it all by yourself. I mean, I kind of did, you know, my blogs and stuff. But I mean, this is like the first thing that wasn't, you know, I didn't work for someone and it was their project or it was a client's project that we had to work on. It was like this is ours. This is us. We make the decisions. We have to figure out how to make it work, how to make it useful. It's not someone else's idea where, you know, if you implement the idea, you can kind of put your hands up and say, like, done. I did what you told me to. I'm out. You know, this is like, if it's not working, we got to figure it out. And I've really enjoyed that because, you know, I really love the business side of it, trying to think of marketing and usefulness and figuring out the whole product itself. It's been very exciting. I also learned a lot of project management stuff. I mean, once again, I've kind of been dealing with other people's project management. This was sort of our first of, you know, the three of us taking what project management we have and kind of fusing it together into sort of our own thing and our own team and figuring, you know, I did a lot of the work on the infrastructure, like setting up Redmine and integrating it with GitHub and you know, setting up the support system and stuff. So that was like really fun to think of what do we need and how do I, you know, create it and do it. And how does this fit in the picture as a whole? So that was really cool. And I guess what goes into that, and this was, I think I have to totally give Rob credit for this because I tried to push back the release a little bit. I just set a random arbitrary date. I said, like, let's August 27th. You know, that's like a week after I go out to Rock in the Rivers. Like, let's just do that. And as it got closer, I was like, well, we should move it up to like September 1st so that it's on the first of a month, you know? And he was like, nah. And I mean, we've heard so many people, so many really good entrepreneurs out there, they say that. They say, just get it done. I mean, you'll get in the cycle of trying to improve it. It'll never be ready and you'll never release it. And then in the end, you'll just have a lot of work and you won't even know if it works. I mean, the way we released it now is, you know, we could have probably gone for like another, you know, for a year developing it until we felt it was just perfect. But I mean, getting it out and releasing it is so critical. It's out there. And really, we can make the decision if this isn't, you know, doing well enough for us, taking up too much time for what we're getting back, we can cut out and say we're done, you know, without having to, you know, add another year of development on top of it. I've worked in a lot of projects with other programmers, and this showed me more than anything, it doesn't matter if you're working with other programmers, the team is critical, and our team worked excellent. And I mean, like, we're all good buddies and it works great. We're all, you know, we have a lot of integrity. We don't, you know, we don't lie or do stupid stuff. We have the same sense of humor. So things are always fun and exciting and happy when we're working. It doesn't get down and dreary. There's not like one guy who's a big jerk or anything. And so
derail you.
No, that's fine. I mean, it's true though. I mean, like the fact that we can joke that way, and you know, I won't get offended. You know, I know our sense of humor and our team worked really well that way. It was great. We could crack jokes about. I mean, we were cracking jokes about each other's bad code in the About Us page. I think you have that you're a better programmer than me. I mean, which is clearly a lie. I mean, I guess I retract my integrity statement. But the other big thing that was really interesting was I work with a lot of guys who are really good at Rails, really good programmers. I mean, like, they do a lot of it. They're, you know, master's degree in computer science. And so a lot of times where I work, it's very clear the direction we need to go. These guys say, this is the best way to do it. Just go. But with us, none of us really were Rails experts or anything like that. I mean, there's a couple times I talked to my coworkers, like, how do you suggest we go this way? But a lot of it was just us fumbling through it and figuring it out. And I'm sure there's probably, you know, some code that would make Rails masters cry in their sleep. But we're learning that and we're figuring it out. And it's been a total awesome learning experience, the whole thing. So I've enjoyed it immensely.
One of the things, you know, talking about communication, one of the things that I thought worked really well were talking, you know, meeting once a week or so and just going through each issue on issue tracker and not actually doing any work, but just going through and talking about each, you know, whether it's a feature or bug or otherwise, just talking about it.
I guess in agile terms, you know, that's kind of like a stakeholder meeting of like, we get together, look at the backlog and decide what to do. One of the things we focus on with agile task, or we haven't really done a lot of implementation about this yet, but we've thought about it a lot, is how to unblur these big giant lists of blurry things, right? So, you know, a project tracker is kind of the same way. You just got this big list of issues and items you need to do. How do you unblur that? And one of our ways of doing that is just meeting once a week, going through every single one. You know, even if it's you go into that one and you say, yeah, that's pretty much taken care of. We can just move on. That's okay. But it just brings everything up on everyone's radar, really syncs us together because we can talk about, you know, sort of like Scrum stuff, talk about our roadblocks, what we need to accomplish. who's blocking what, you know, what can we do to work together on it? So yeah, I think that's a great tool.
So some of the tools we use to make the app, Ruby and Rails, of course. You mentioned that a few times. Git is our version control, and GitHub, which is pretty sweet. I'm pretty happy with that.
Totally. I love it. I think even, and we're paying for the private repos, so that makes it even better because you get all, I mean, I'm so glad that they do that because you get all the cool functionality of GitHub, but you can also just say like, you know, hey, this is hidden. No, only certain people could see it.
Yeah, I really like the what is it, the card, the punch in time tracker thing, or is there like it tells you what times and what days
commits by time. Like, you know, we tend to work a lot on like Thursday nights at like 10 at night. Interesting.
Yeah. Our issue tracker, we use Redmine. I think that's been great. I mean, I haven't had any beefs with that at all. I don't use like the, we don't really, well, I guess we do use the wiki a little bit.
A little bit, but I think I'd like to integrate that into more. It has like forums and stuff too if you have bigger teams, but we're pretty small. I'd like to use the wiki more. I think the wiki could be used a lot more for sort of when you're doing analysis of things. I think we don't use it enough. I think wikis don't get used for that enough. They tend to get used. People look at wikis like Wikipedia, like this is one article and it's going to be here forever. So it has to be this one article that is relevant and perfect. But it's like the whole point of a wiki is it's supposed to be flexible. So like I should be able to make like an article called like how to unblur lists and just people edit it and come up with ideas. And I guess that's a little off track. Continue.
Well, I guess what I was going to say is as far as being an issue tracker and integrating with Git and everything, Redmine's been great.
Totally. I love it. I like that we have the integration.
I actually use it for RocketShipIt and a few other projects that I'm using, so I like it.
Yeah.
We're using Blueprint for CSS framework.
That's been an interesting journey because Rob was not impressed with CSS frameworks. He does not like them. He likes the reset, but the whole grid thing, he was not a fan of. And I still don't think he's fully convinced on it. And it's well, that's a cool thing about Rob is he's kind of an against the grainer sometimes. Like, I just get too excited about new things so much. I'm just like, oh, my God, Blueprint is awesome. It's got this grid and you could do stuff. And like sometimes he's like, really? I don't think it saves you that much time. And it kind of makes you think about it in a different light. So that's cool.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I like it. If anything else, well, you know, I can't even say for sure that it helped save us any time.
Well, but that's the thing,
I feel like it does.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I can't argue with it anymore. jQuery. I don't know. It's the same thing. I guess if we had to write all the what is it, document dot
Ajax. Yeah, like, jQuery saved you time just by the sheer number of like sort of
characters that you don't have to write.
Well, like plugins and stuff, you can really integrate. There's a lot of powerful plugins and code written for jQuery already, which is really awesome because it saves you time. You are using other people's code, which is like, sometimes it can be bad. But I like jQuery. I haven't really tried MooTools. I really should. Rob likes MooTools. He was talking about it. But I kind of just said, let's go jQuery. Rails by default comes with prototype. And I was like, I don't want to use that. That's old.
That's old. Skype we're using it right now. We do the same thing when we're having programmer meetings and things.
Skype,
we just Skype it up, you know, get three people on and just talk. And
yeah, I mean, even if we're just working talk while we code, yeah, totally, we do it a lot.
And then our support ticket, we're using OS ticket, which is a PHP based, which I wanted to mention that just because, you know, we're not all like, if it's not Ruby, it's got to go, you know, kind of thing or anything like that. We use the right tools for the job, and we found that, at least I picked that one for another project I was doing, and I really liked it, so I recommended it to you, and it seems to be a good solution.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that we got away with using Ruby on Rails for the programming, because Rob was not a Rails guy at all, and he was really not convinced by Rails. He likes PHP, and you've done PHP. I don't know how I got away from it. I think it's because Rob, I think, wanted to learn. He wants to try and learn Rails, I think. But in general, I'm surprised that we ended up using that, because I thought he would have vetoed that early on.
Well, if I remember right, I think me and you made like a, I think we started the Rails project, like you made the actual project, put it in GitHub, and made like the very first, like you could add a task with like an input box, and that I think he had to just go with it.
Well, yeah, and I think if I actually,
if
I remember correctly, too, one of the things was we were talking about it, planning writing the app or something, and he was like, "So, you know, what platform are we going to use?" And I'm pretty sure I was just like, "We're using Rails," and I kind of just said it. And I think it was just so early on that he was kind of like, okay, I don't know. If we did it again, I'm not sure if we would use Rails or not, because he doesn't like it a whole lot, I don't think. I think he finds it interesting. He finds it interesting, but he definitely does not drink like the Ruby Kool-Aid. Like Rob has not drank any Kool-Aid. I don't think he's drank Kool-Aid since he was like 5. So, you know, like you have to come with pretty convincing arguments. Like if you say things like Ruby is easy to read, you know, he's like, that's stupid. You're a programmer. You can read code. That, you know, and you're like, oh, well, I guess you're right. It's got a cool name. And he's like, that's stupid. Shut up. And you're like, oh, okay.
Well, I don't know. I'm all for learning as much as possible. I, you know, instead of just using jQuery every time, you know, check out MoonTools, check out Dojo, you know, instead of Rails, check out Python, check them all out. And I think you can learn from all of them. And I think they all have good, you know, ups and downs.
I agree.
I mean, I started with Perl and it's got some ups. It's got some downs too.
Would you say that you're a Perl monger?
I was for a while.
No, you played. I couldn't write Perl right now.
I couldn't do it. It's one of those languages, if you're not using it every day, you lose it.
Exactly. You should golf it and then see if you can, you know, that's crazy. Hey, well, all right, let's wrap this up. That wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. If you want to check it out, go to agiletask.me. We, you know, I dedicated a whole episode to it because we're pretty excited about it, pretty proud, and we'd like it if you guys would check it out too. Leave some feedback on the feedback tab and get satisfaction. We'd love to hear from you guys. I want to remind you, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. We have lots of different ways you can subscribe from there. You can also leave feedback for the show by going to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We're at faceoffshow on Twitter. You can email studio@faceoffshow.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. We really do appreciate it. And we will see you guys next week.